This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The Central Forest Spine Master Plan for Ecological Linkages, or CFS, is arguably the most important conservation initiative in Malaysia. It was created in 2009 as a government effort to protect biodiversity and ecosystem services by securing landscape connectivity between Peninsula Malaysia's main forest blocks. Although an excellent and exciting plan on paper, its implementation might be a bit more challenging. Joining me to explain why the CFS is so important for wildlife conservation and the main challenges facing its implementation are Dr. Ahimsa Campos Arthik, the Principal Investigator at the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants, or MEME, and Angie Tan, a Project Coordinator at Wild Asia. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Hello, Judith.
Very good. Thank you for having us, Julia.
Always a pleasure. Angie, first time that we're having you on the show, so welcome.
I'm pretty excited. A little bit anxious also.
Nothing to be anxious about, but maybe we can get to know you a little bit better. Tell me a little bit about, you know, Wild Asia and the work that you do through it.
Okay, great. As you mentioned, I'm a project coordinator in Wild Asia. Actually, this is a joint program between Wild Asia and also MEME. So I'm working on the CFS Master Plan. Mm-hmm. And I've been working in this project since earlier this year. Okay. And Wild Asia is actually a social enterprise, and it's a not-for-profit organization, and it encourages sustainable practices, business practices in all levels, starting from the small growers up to the supply chain, mm-hmm. and working with the bigger organizations. And they are mainly focusing also in oil palm sector, but also in other sectors as well. For example, responsible tourism and etc.
Okay, and your main focus in Wild Asia would be?
And my main focus in Wild Asia would be working on the Central Forest Spine Management Guidelines, okay. developing these management guidelines by first engaging with the stakeholders, getting to know what's happening on the ground in some of the priority linkages that we're working on.
Okay, all right, and I think you're going to explain that in greater detail after this. Ahimsa, I know that I always pronounce your surname wrongly, and just for the record, I'd like you to pronounce it properly for everyone to know.
Arthais.
Okay, that doesn't make it any easier for any of us. How are things at MEME? How is everything there?
Very good, very good. So then, I'm the principal investigator of MEME, the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants. And then we are a project, it's a collaboration between research at the University, the University of Nottingham, Malaysia Campus, mm-hmm. as well as Perhelitan, mm-hmm. the Wildlife Department. And our main focus is on studying, understanding, and working for the conservation of Malaysian elephants. Mm-hmm. And today we are talking about the Central Forest Spine that is very important for elephants, and mm-hmm. we can discuss that in detail.
Okay. All right. Okay, so Central Forest Spine Master Plan. So this has been something that, like I mentioned, since 2009 it was created, but I mean, it's been in the works since even before that?
Yeah, I guess the vision, and I'm talking from what I hear from people, was sometime in the early 2000s. So some people realized that Malaysia was developing very fast. Mm-hmm. And then it was bringing many good things. So people, quality of life was improving, the economy was improving. But as a consequence, the forest was being fragmented. And then this affected the wildlife. You know, Malaysia is very rich in wildlife. Mm-hmm. Malaysia has tigers, elephants, leopards, cow leopards, really, really fascinating animals. And then some people realized that there was a need to accommodate the wildlife in the future. And that's how the idea started. And then in the late 2000s, the plan was being developed until it was finalized in 2009.
Okay.
And it was approved by the cabinet in 2011.
Okay, that's a long gap, though.
So I think this is a complex plan. And, you know, I would say that it was probably a natural pace for something of this scale. And something important is that this was a new thing. So
sure.
There was no kind of a previous experience. And people had to think about how to incorporate all these things, who has to do what, how to do it. And then this takes time, yeah.
It's a multi, agency. There's many, many people involved.
Yeah. That's one of the most defining things of CFS is its complexity and its scale. So then it covers over one-third of Peninsula Malaysia. So it's more than 50,000 square kilometers.
That's crazy.
So it's very, very big. And then it involves many states and many agencies at federal and state level and many non-government organizations. So then it's difficult to coordinate all these people. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But what areas does it cover? So you mentioned it's huge, but what are the forest complexes that are covered under this?
Yeah. So just to give a general view of what the CFS is, CFS It aims to promote connectivity among the main forest patches in Malaysia. So mm-hmm. then four big blocks were identified.
Mm-hmm. This is Peninsula Malaysia.
Only Peninsula Malaysia. And then the four main blocks were the Central Range. That mm-hmm. includes from Balun Temenggor and Ulu Muda all the way down here to the Titiwangsa Range to Kuala Lumpur. Mm-hmm. And then the Greater Tamanegara, the Chinibera Wetlands area in Pahang, mm-hmm. and then Endarun Pin between Pahang and Johor.
Wow, that's huge.
So then the idea is that the vision was to have forests connected from Johor all the way to Thailand, so then that an animal will be able
To travel.
Yeah,
to so travel in peace.
Kind of a model animal will be able to move all the way to Peninsula Malaysia.
Okay.
And then the plan included 37 corridors that are called ecological linkages that try to connect different pastures of forest.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is to aid in, I suppose, in wildlife travel, in just basically protecting the biodiversity that already exists within the place.
Yeah, the main focus was to protect biodiversity. Mm-hmm. And then something very important to understand is that animals and plants need to move.
Yes.
Okay? So then, of course, if you think a big animal like an elephant or a tiger needs to move to find its food, to find mates, to disperse from the place it's born to wherever it's established, but also trees and any form of life will be always moving somehow.
Yeah.
So then you need to have some genetic exchange, even among plants. So then the idea was that if you isolate this patch of forest, at the end what you have is these fragmented populations that eventually will collapse and they're not viable in the long term. But if you create connectivity, you can always increase the genetic viability and other things.
Because mm-hmm. as it stands, there is, of course, I mean, those are the issues that are facing our wildlife, isn't it? The fragmentation, the lack of, well, I suppose roads coming in, you know. All those sorts of the ones that we've spoken about many, many times before, these are the things. So I suppose this forest, Central Forest Spine Plan was meant to kind of mitigate all these issues.
Yeah. The main purpose was to promote connectivity to conserve biodiversity. Okay. Particularly wildlife, I would say, because wildlife was, I think, what was in the mind of the developers. They were thinking about big animals moving in the landscape.
Sure.
But the whole biodiversity.
Okay, all right. Mm. What about the Orang Asli communities residing within these places? Because, I mean, these forest areas, I would imagine the Orang Asli are the people who, I mean, the ones living there.
Yeah. The area is so big that it goes beyond the protected areas. And so then it includes open one-third of the peninsula. So then there are Orang Asli communities and there are other communities as well. So there are many people living within the CFS landscapes.
Okay.
So the idea is to be able to have sustainable development and activities that are compatible with conservation.
Okay.
And there are areas that are for conservation, like protected areas, and there are areas that are for multi-purpose use, mm-hmm. you know, where you can have agriculture, you can have plantations, and of course you have people living in the forest like many Orang Asli. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Mm. And who are the main people behind this plan? Who are the ones that kind of mooted it? And, you know, who are the ones that will have to eventually implement it?
So basically, this Centre for Spine originated from after the National Physical Plan, when they recognised that forest fragmentation is a huge issue to biodiversity. So that's when they developed this Centre for Spine master plan by town and county planning. And then there's actually three levels of agencies involved. So the first one is, of course, headed by the NPP, National Physical Plan. And second layer will be headed by the NRE. It was NRE in the previous government, and
Natural
now it's
resources.
CATS. Yes, correct. And now it's CATS. And then the third level are the implementing agencies. And this will be the state level government implementing agencies.
Okay. All right. And then where do the NGOs and everybody else come in?
So we are also the supporting organizations. So every one of us in the conservation NGOs are trying very much in line with the government implementing agencies to make this CFS a success.
Okay. So it sounds amazing on paper, I'm sure, but I'm not quite sure about how the implementation is going to work. Do you foresee problems in that happening as well?
So maybe I can tell you about the results of our work.
Sure.
So then, part of the project that we are doing now, one of the objectives was to understand people's attitudes and perceptions towards the plan, and particularly expert opinion. Okay, so then we're not talking about the local communities,
mm-hmm.
but we were interested 7 years since the plan has been approved. don't know, what the expert stakeholders, the people in the government, in the NGOs, universities, in the private sector, thought about the CFS. Mm-hmm. And then we ran a questionnaire that was answered by around 130 people. Okay. And I'm talking about people who work on CFS, who are familiar with CFS. And then we asked a number of questions. The first one is, do you think that CFS is an important plan? And I was very pleasantly surprised to see that 100% of the respondents say that not only that it's important, but 90% say that it is very important.
Okay.
So in total agreement in the importance of the plan. And then the second question we made to people is, do you think it is feasible?
So feasible.
Can it happen?
Can
it be done? And then we split this into two questions. One is, do you think it was feasible in 2011 when it was approved? And do you think it is feasible nowadays to compare what has happened in this period of time? And I was also very surprised that the 70% of people said that it was feasible at the beginning. And a few more people, 72%, said that it's feasible nowadays. So then people think that still is doable. But then we asked them what they think about the implementation. And only 45% of people thought that the implementation was somehow positive.
Okay.
So then basically what we have is that total agreement that CFS is very important, mm-hmm. high level of agreement in that CFS can be done, but much less agreement in that it is going well. And I think it's a common story. I think we hear this very frequently in Malaysia, at least in conservation projects in which the plans are good, the implementation
not so good.
Yeah, so I think that's what we need to step in and, yeah.
Yeah, so since 2011, there actually has been a lot of implementation and coordination being done with regards to CFS Master Plan. And for example, so FRIM is doing a lot of engagement work with government agencies in Selangor in producing a management guideline in one of the linkages in Selangor. Mm-hmm. And most recently, actually last week, I was in a stakeholder engagement in Kelantan for one of the linkages in lodging in Guamusang. So there has been many efforts being taken by implementing agencies. But of course, we need a lot more done because looking at the land use changes, a lot has been converted from virgin forests to large-scale monoculture plantations since 2011 when the CFS Master Plan was approved by the Cabinet.
For someone who doesn't understand what monoculture, could you explain what that means?
Okay, monoculture plantation basically is a large patch of plantation being dominated by single species. For example, oil palm plantation, rubber plantation, and etc.
Mm-hmm. So you were on the ground, right? I mean, you spent a lot of time doing research, years, if I'm not mistaken. Amy, what did you observe? Especially in that, you know, it's been so many years, right? There is a gap. You know, what did you observe yourself?
Yeah, in this year alone, I have witnessed a lot of land use changes within the three linkages that we were focusing on.
Sure.
So some of these lands were converted to monoculture plantation, as I mentioned just now, and some were actually given away as leasehold to private land ownerships. So these are the companies that have the ownership to the land for up to 50 years. For example, let's say they were leased out in 2011, they actually have the ownership until 2060s. And
right.
Particularly one of the companies in lodging had up until 2110. Yeah, so
wow.
That's a long time. Yes.
And basically what that means is that primary forest has been cut down for whatever reasons. I mean, even if they do replant it, we've still lost virgin rainforest in
yes,
the process.
Yes, correct. Once this forest has been converted to plantation, it mm-hmm. really hampers the connectivity and the viability of the linkage for the crossings of wildlife.
Mm-hmm. And where are some of the places that you've actually seen this happen?
Yeah, I've seen this a lot in, especially in lodging, mm-hmm. and some areas in Gerik, in Perak, mm-hmm. and also in Kedah, in Baling, Ulu Muda.
Okay, that's
the southern part of Ulu Muda.
Because it's where we work. So then, you know, it might be happening elsewhere as well. But, you know, this is the three landscapes where we are working.
Right. Mm-hmm. And essentially, once this has happened, you know, to get those linkages back to kind of like, you know, regrow it, that's a whole different ball game, isn't it?
Yeah, first we have to get ownership of these lands first.
So you might have to wait till 2110?
There is still hope. Okay. We can reclaim this land.
You're so very positive.
hope the best out of it.
Okay.
So one of the possible ways is to reclaim these lands. But first, what we recommend is to engage the state government first. The state essentially are the implementing agencies for CFS Master Plan, and it's important for us to get their buy-in, their commitment towards saving these linkages. And then from there, we can try to engage the land owners if it has been converted to the private ownership, mm-hmm. and then trying to do some programs with them, trying to secure the lands, for example, doing some CSR programs with them if they are very willing to give up the land. So that's one positive outcome that I from my recent field work in lodging was one of the private owners actually are very willing to sell off their land because they were facing so much human elephant conflict. So whatever they planted, whatever money they've put in are actually being destroyed. So they don't see a huge benefit in planting again. So they have been very positive to sell out the whole patch of land. So this gives us a great opportunity for us to reclaim back these lands and also for the linkage, of course.
I'm just curious, you know, because always when there is like human elephant conflict, for example, sometimes the elephants are killed. Was that an issue that cropped up, especially in this situation? No, I don't
know. No. So in Malaysia, elephant killing because of conflict is not very frequent. It's not very common. So then what happens is that normally people will just ask the water department to take action.
Sure.
So then we haven't observed any direct extreme case like an elephant being killed in those landscapes. So what we know is that the elephant present a challenge for the landholders, that they have to spend a lot of money in the conflict mitigation, and they don't know how to do it. So that's where we step in, and we are trying to engage with more people in terms of how to bring science into the mitigation, and sure. that's part of the work we're planning to do increasingly from next year. So then trying to step from the science and from the research into the real practical matters of human-wildlife coexistence.
Mm-hmm. Because I suppose when they do get these plots of land, they're just seeing it as a business opportunity. They're not thinking, they don't actually do surveys or find out what's happening there. And yeah. I mean,
in a place where you have elephants, you need to understand that there will be always conflict. Mm-hmm. And then anyone who is developing the land for plantations, they need to factor the elephants as part of, you know, like I'm from Europe, so in Europe you have winter. You cannot escape the winter, right? So then at this time of the year it's cold and you cannot just plant tomatoes because they will die.
Yeah.
So then in a place like Malaysia you have elephants and tigers, and then you cannot hope not to have them. So then we need to be, you know, happy that we have them around. But these animals, elephants, love our crops, and they are very powerful and they can access them and eat them. So then we need to include crop protection from the beginning in the planning, and we need to budget for it, and we need to train people how to do it. What we observe is that many plantations at different scale, big scale and small scale, they don't know how to do this, and they're very reactive.
Yes,
so they plant first, elephants come, they cause a lot of damage, they get upset, they complain, and they spend a lot of money in replanting. And then we are trying now to engage with some communities to say, okay, you have to invest money at the beginning, but it pays off.
Right. And they are accepting, I mean, they are, I suppose they have seen that they need to do some planning, basically.
Yes. Communities tend to be not very accepting at the beginning because they want someone else to do for them. And we are trying to tell, and we haven't started just the intense work on the ground, something that Angie will be doing next year. But what we are trying to do is to tell communities, you have to deal with this. So we engage with you. We'll try to bring our scientific ideas on how to make this work. But you are the one who has to implement it. It's not going to be the government who will come and do for you, because there are too many communities. The scale is too big as to be done by the authorities.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. The state governments have to take the lead on this.
Yeah.
But I know there's going to be lots of issues between federal and state. And we're going to talk a little bit about that after this quick break. I am speaking to Dr. Ahimsa Campos Arthith. He's a professor and principal investigator at the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants. And Angie Tan, she's a project coordinator at Wild Asia. And they are telling us all about the Central Forest Spine Master Plan. And we'll talk a little bit about the federal government, state government conflict after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Dr. Ahimsa Campos Arthith. He's a professor and principal investigator at the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants, and Angie Tan. She's a project coordinator at Wild Asia, and both of them are here to discuss the Central Forest Spine Master Plan and basically how that's going to be implemented here in Malaysia. It's a wonderful, wonderful plan. lots of writing on it. But I think, as we mentioned before the break, there are issues between the decision to do it and also the actual implementation by the state government. So federal government obviously can tell the state government, yeah, you do this, you do that. But why would the state government do it? Because it is going to impact their economic decisions and policies, isn't it?
Yes, I think you just made a very good summary. So it's a fantastic plan. And it's really important for conservation. It's the most important thing, I would say, for terrestrial conservation in Malaysia. But it's a very big and complex plan, and the implementation is difficult. And there are some governance issues that make things even more difficult. So in particular, the idea that the plan was conceived and developed at federal level. Mm. So that it was a baby of the federal government. But the implementation, because of how land matters belong to states in Malaysia and the Malaysian constitution, that falls on the state governments. And I would say that there was not very strong buy-in by the state governments, at least at the earlier stages of the implementation. I think increasingly the states are kind of taking over the idea and embracing it a bit more. But originally there were not many resources provided to the state governments to implement this plan. There were not clear incentives for them to do it, and there was no mechanism for the federal government to enforce the implementation.
Mm.
And in many ways, this has delayed a lot, the implementation. What we see now is that 7 years since it was approved, there has been a considerable amount of land loss.
Lost, yeah.
Yeah, so then probably you're talking about more than 40% of the forest that was in 2011 in the corridors, okay? Not in the landscapes, not in the 50,000 square kilometers, but in these corridors that are kind of the ice in the cake of the plan. Much of it has been lost. And it has been lost because there have been concessions given out and because it has been developed by state governments. So clearly, one of the top priorities is to make sure that the states get the buy-in for the plan, and then that they believe that it's in the best interest to do it. And I would say that two factors here. One is the practical issues that states will need probably more support, more resources to implement, but also there's an element of awareness. You know, ecosystem services are real and then count. They're a bit intangible, and I think it's difficult to sell them. But for states to understand the long-term benefits, talking about things like water and many other issues that the forest is bringing, and has a clear economic benefits for the states and for people in general.
Okay, so how can we get the state governments to understand that? I mean, it's a difficult question. Obviously, they've got to think about their income. They've got to think about their resources for their states. You know, how do we even start broaching that subject?
Well, we always come back to this issue, and all the conservation issues in Malaysia at the end is how we can get the states to enforce or to implement.
Enforcement, that's always the issue, isn't
it? So then I would say that I think both federal and state governments need to take some responsibility here. So then on state governments, because they're the ones who implement things on the ground, they need to get the buy-in. And I guess they need to feel that there's something there for them.
Mm.
And that could be, again, a matter of communication or a matter of providing some resources. But communication has been quite poor, I would say. We need to communicate much more with the state governments. And that's something that increasingly the NGOs are doing, for example. They're not realizing that there needs to be that kind of bridge between the plan and those who have to implement it. But also I think the federal government needs to think about how to make clear the benefits for the states, not just produce a plan and give it to them. So then I think there are some mechanisms. There's one that has been created in India just a couple of years ago, which is the fiscal transfers based on forest. So and right now, Malaysia pays, the federal government gives some fiscal transfer to the states based on the amount of road or the amount of people in the state. But what if we also reward the amount of good forest?
Mm-hmm.
So then states are doing very well in terms of implementing the CFS or protecting its forest or maintaining the rivers clean or having more wildlife. They could benefit financially by getting more money from the central government.
Okay.
So I think we need to really create those kind of incentives that will benefit the states and that they will say, okay, there is something here for me. I'm not just being imposed a plan that I didn't ask for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. And I mean, for someone like you who works, you know, very specifically with elephants, for example, you know, why is this plan very important for elephants, I mean, even tigers, you know, wildlife in general?
Okay. So then our mission or the mission of my organization is really to conserve elephants in Malaysia.
Sure.
And CFS is probably the most important thing to achieve this conservation. So then CFS is the spatial template over which everything else happens. Mm. So, for example, we work with the Wildlife Department on the Elephant Action Plan and in the implementation of the action plan. And really most of our activities have to do with, you know, habitat, having proper habitat for elephants. Elephants are big animals. They move over big areas. So then they have big home ranges to find the food, to find the mates, and they need to have connected forests. If they live in fragmented habitats, they will not survive. So for us, in order to achieve elephant conservation, we need to protect the habitat where they live, and that's where CFS come in. And the good thing is that CFS, it can work as a template for many other plans. And in fact, the Tiger Action Plan, the Elephant Conservation Action Plan, the tapir plan that is being drafted right now, all of them are using the CFS as a template.
Oh.
And that helps to align positions and to strengthen positions. And something really cool about CFS is that everyone is behind the plan. So then all the NGOs, all the academics, you know, all the non-government organizations, they're really embracing the idea. So then that's why we need also the implementing agencies to align and to embrace this idea as well.
Mm-hmm. Is the Central Forest Plan, I mean, is this a plan that we've seen in other countries that has actually worked as well?
Okay, so CFS was really, really, I would say was very visionary. Okay, so then it was a bit ahead of its time in this region. And if I can give some personal story. So then, you know, I'm not from Malaysia. I came for the first time to Peninsula Malaysia in 2009. And then I learned about CFS, and I learned about Malaysian elephants, and I learned about the forest. But I remember that CFS was one of the things that got me very excited about Malaysia, because I saw a place where there was a vision. Okay, there was something that was exciting, looking at the future. I saw a kind of something that there was will there, and I saw NGOs, which in some countries you see all that was fighting with each other,
yes,
they were all kind of excited about this plan.
United,
yeah. Yeah, and that was really exciting. I remember these times, 2009, 2010, 2011, that was really cool. And that's when I began working here. So then, in that sense, I think that was very unique. At that time, there was no precedent to look at. So there are some other plans, like in Central America, there's the Central American Corridor, and in Europe, there's a network of protected areas, but it is not the same. Since CFS was approved to now, we have more experiences. And actually, Bhutan has implemented what is called Bhutan for Life,
okay,
which is a fantastic plan. It's really, I'm a huge fan of that plan, in which they have protected 51% of the land of the country.
Wow.
But it's a small country.
That is true.
With less
still,
people.
But
still, you know, very visionary. So then what I feel now in retrospect is that Malaysia missed the chance to be that kind of a early adopter, you know, that's kind of a pioneer country to implement something like this.
Trailblazer.
I think we're still on time on doing, you know, fantastic, really, really worth work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But time is passing, and business as usual is not very promising. So then we need to really think, if we want CFS to be successful, we need to really put our money where our mouth is, or, you know, put resources on it. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
Okay, and name names. Who are the ones that need to start doing that right now?
Well, for me, it's really the government authorities. I think the non-governmental organizations are very involved in the plan. And I would say that it's surprising to see how many NGOs are fundraising to work for CFS on something that you will expect to, you know, the government to be funding, because it's a government plan. And I think really it is in the implementing agencies, and both at federal and state level,
mm-hmm,
where I see more need for embracing the plan, or for, you know, taking ownership and you know, kind of getting more hands-on on the plan. I think the plan is really good, and everyone agrees on that. But non-governmental NGOs can only contribute. They cannot lead the work.
Sure.
So there needs to be clear leadership. And I think in this context, in 2018 in Malaysia, we have a new government, and it's a great time to show new leadership and to say, well, you know, we want Malaysia to be doing this excellent work, and we want to see a Malaysia where, you know, a, an elephant can move from Johor all the way to Kedah. And I think it's still doable, and it's a great opportunity for the new government to step in.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, more I suppose, recognition or realization of the economic benefits of protecting forests, right? That is severely lacking at the moment.
It's always very tricky to put everything into economic terms, right?
Unfortunately,
I think it is clear that there are very clear benefits of protecting biodiversity, but also they're difficult to quantify. And there's always the risk of, depending how you do your quantification, it might look like a lot or not so much.
Right. And it might have the adverse reaction.
Yeah, so you might kind of say, I prefer to buy out this. I pay for this if the quantification is not very high. So I think there are many intangible things that are clearly valuable and they are difficult to quantify. But there are clear benefits, very, very clear benefits in conserving. And the best example is water. I don't know, you want to talk about water, Angie?
Yeah. So on a personal level, we always think forest is very far away. We have the Kota Damansara Community Forest, and even further away where we work, usually with the elephants, will be the Belum Temenggor and Taman Negara and Ndarampin. We always think it's very far. It's 300 or 400 or 500 kilometers away from KL, where we live here. But actually, forest is very much nearer to us. It's actually happening in at home. So I'm quoting Shah Reza, a quote that we heard recently when we were attending a conference in Ipoh. So he was saying that actually forest is within our house. So where does the water come from? Where does the water, clean water, comes from? It comes from the forest. You might not notice it, but every day you are enjoying the good forest that we have through the water and also through the clean air that we are breathing in. Mm-hmm. So forest is actually everywhere surrounding us right now.
Yeah, and you know, for all the people complaining about floods in KL at the moment, you know, that realization of that, you know, you're cutting down all your trees, you're cutting down your forest, that has a trickle-down effect, ultimately.
Exactly. It's always the indirect effect that people do not realize that forest, this is the important forest. Mm-hmm. Also as much as the connectivity for the wildlife, but also the water, the clean air, the flood, and everything else.
Yeah, and I mean, protecting biodiversity is important for protecting our future as well. I mean, we're not just talking about the animals, we're talking about also food biodiversity, we're talking about food security in the future, water security in the future, all these issues that, like you said, people don't link it to the forests.
Yes. I always think that the Malaysian, the quintessential Malaysian food is durian. I don't know if everyone will agree, but so durian is a fantastic plant that is pollinated by bats, you know, in some cases by flying foxes.
Yeah.
And its fruits are being eaten and the seeds dispersed by elephants and some bears.
Megafauna that can do it, right?
Yeah, so then really we need to acknowledge the importance of you know, biodiversity for people. But also I want to also acknowledge that biodiversity is important not only in how it is useful to us. Mm. I think a tiger has value in itself,
whether
it produces some benefit to us or not. But actually, they do produce benefits. You know, they maintain ecosystem function, they maintain the forests working as they are.
Exactly.
And in the long run, we benefit.
They're the apex predator. Yeah. They're not there. Yeah. Everything kind of falls.
Yeah. And something that also I think is very important is that the CFS is a great plan, but no one knows about it.
You know, it's, well, that's why you're here, Ahimsa.
Correct. That's the main purpose. And I think it's also a very timely thing to create some kind of branding, you know, saying, okay, CFS is a cool project that is happening here in Peninsula Malaysia, and we need to reach out to people so then they know about it and they care about it and they can feel a bit more interested, because, you know, there's a serious lack of awareness on this. And it's really cool when you explain people what is this all about. People like it a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you said, there's nothing to dispute about this plan. It's a beautiful plan. It's a visionary plan. It's just taking too long to implement, and we are losing forest every day. I mean, as we speak, we are losing forest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Angie, you on the ground, you know, you've seen that happening. I mean, what are your hopes for the CFS? And I mean, what are your hopes for its implementation?
I see. So looking at such doom scenarios...
It's hard, isn't it?
It's difficult. It's
conservation fatigue.
What we see, what is forest being cleared and on steep slopes and some high elevations, and it's really disheartening to look at it on first-hand experience. And I do still hope and I feel we can do something about it now in this coming years. We can do a lot of coordination and engagement with not only with the implementing agencies, but on the community side and all the other NGOs. This is the time for us to make the concerted effort to realign our objectives and try to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's doom and gloom for now, but I can still see a glimmer, a hope, the light at the end of the tunnel. If we are all in this together within this coming few coming years, okay. within this coming years.
What about you, Ansa?
Well, if I go back to the result of our questionnaire, we found that around 70% of people thought that it was doable. Mm. And I'm talking about people who are very critical of all these kind of things. So then I think having 70% of these people saying, yes, this can happen, that made me feel really optimistic.
Okay.
I was expecting much lower support or much less confidence. So I think it's up to us. And at the end of the day, a country like Malaysia is a rich country. We have resources, we have human capital, we have natural capital. So I think we should take agency and say, do we want this to happen? So I think as a society, it's for us to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think things are in place for success. It's up to us to take it or not.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important that, you know, regular folk like me, you know, not involved in the NGOs, you know, not to expect you guys to do all the hard work. We also need to kind of rally our policymakers, rally our government and kind of get them on board as, you know, to talk about it.
Absolutely. I think something that I always try to bring across to students, for example, is that we need to compromise. So then often we have antagonistic objectives. Like,
yes.
You know, I want to drive in my car as fast as possible, and I want to travel from here to Kuantan in 2 hours.
Yeah.
But then I want to have a lot of forest and tigers somewhere in a way that don't bother me. Yeah. So then often we need to compromise, and we tell to people, you know what, you are lucky. So you want to drive from Greek to Jeli, not in 2 hours, maybe in 3 hours and a half, because your top speed is only 50 kilometers per hour because you are going through a tiger and elephant landscape. How lucky you are.
Yes.
So, and I think we need to really put things in a way that people are willing to compromise. And I think also how we communicate this is important. If you're just being told, this is what you have to do and that's it, it doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're presented with a rationale behind and it's a sensible rationale, people mm-hmm. will accept it and buy in. So I think we need to get people to understand that there are reasons why we just don't develop as much as we could, we don't make as much money as we could, we are thinking about the future, we're thinking about other interests like biodiversity and other things. I think that's important.
Okay. And there is going to be a public talk happening just this Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, you know, for people to find out more about this. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about that. Angie?
Yes. So we're going to have a public panel discussion on CFS, its implementation and its progress. So it will be on 22nd of November, Thursday at 6 p.m. And it will be held in Nottingham Kuala Lumpur Teaching Centre, Chulan Tower. We encourage the public to come via public transport and also couple with your friends. If you want to know more about CFS, do join us in the public panel discussion.
Okay, and everyone is welcome. It's a free event.
Yes, it's a free event. Everyone is welcome. We hope you can bring your friends, your colleagues along after work.
Okay, Ahimsa, this is of course part of Mindset.
It's part of Mindset, yes.
Your baby.
Yeah, so we have this monthly events. And then it starts at 6 p.m. and they will be, after the panel, there will be refreshments. It's a great place to meet people with similar interests, to talk one-to-one, to reach to the panelists. So then people, please come and enjoy. It's a very good place to be.
We have a very good lineup of the panelists. So it will be moderated by Dr. Nagulendran from MESTEC. He is a very influential person in the development of ICCFS GF funding project document. And followed by three other amazing panelists. They are Dr. Mazalan Kamis from Institute of Darul Rizwan, Dr. Bala, who is one of the person instrumental in developing the CFS Master Plan.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and will be, of course, Dr. Reza from Wild Asia, who will be speaking more on the economic front and also about the agriculture side in terms of CFS.
Okay, so, well, multi-stakeholder again, very, yes. very, so everyone. Okay, so I'm guessing students would really benefit from this as well.
Definitely.
I mean, besides the public, of course.
Yeah, you know, these events were conceived for the general public, not for students, but we found out that the students love them and tend to be about, 40-50% of the audience every event. And we are very happy about that because, you know, they seem to like bringing this kind of good events. And something that we think is important in Kuala Lumpur and in Malaysia is to bring some kind of forums or some platforms for people to talk and to exchange ideas and to meet people with common interests. Mm-hmm. Kuala Lumpur is a place with a lot of traffic jams, and people often will be, you know, kind of reluctant to move after work to go places. But now, with public transport improving, things are fantastic. MRT comes very close, so there is no reason not to come.
So within this project, we also created a communication platform regarding CFS implementation. So we have a very diverse groups, especially on civil society organizations, the CSO, and also the NGOs coming together for us to be able to share information and also get updated on matters about CFS implementation.
Okay. All right, and these are for the people who are very much involved in the, I mean, the stakeholders. That's what it is.
Yes,
this is the NGOs.
Correct.
These are the organizations.
These are the experts who are working directly within CFS or also helping CFS to move.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, basically we found that many people were working on CFS issues, but we were not having proper communication. So having a place where we can meet and talk, and then we can communicate and coordinate. And I think it's really important to have this kind of exchange of you know, what is happening on these landscapes.
So that's already happening?
Yeah, so then also this Thursday we are hoping to sign the TOR, and you know, it's an ongoing process, but it's the second meeting we have already.
Okay,
We have around 15 organizations meeting. So that's very good.
Yeah. But you're open to more organizations joining?
Yeah, people who are working on CFS, absolutely.
Yeah, because everyone needs to get this going, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So who's basically getting all of this going? I mean, how are you even, you know, moving forward? How are you guys kind of grouping? I'm sure you need help to get all of that done.
Yeah, so all of our activities align with the CFS, so we have multiple donors. The specific project that the NGO is working on is being funded by Yayasan Hasana, which is the foundation of Kasana National. And Yayasan Hasana has CFS as one of the priorities on the environmental pillar. And it's not only us, so then there are a number of groups, NGOs that are being funded to cover different aspects of CFS implementation. So we're working on the stakeholder engagement and the land tenure on the ground. Some of the people are working on forest restoration and other aspects of it.
Okay. All right. So lots of hope, right? Let's not get fatigued by this. So we just need to keep pushing it. And I guess for anyone listening, you know, just keep pushing the agenda to their policymakers and to their elected representatives as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Juliet.
No, my pleasure. Thank you both for joining me today. And I hope people get interested in the Central Forest Pine. I mean, we need to make that a hashtag, I think, you know, and get that going somehow.
You know, nature is fascinating. So you know, we just need to bring it to people. So just make it accessible. And I think people like these things.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you guys are doing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Dr. Ahimsa Campos Arteth. He's a professor and principal investigator at the Management and Ecology of Malaysian Elephants. And Angie Tan, she's a project coordinator at Wild Asia. And they both joined me to discuss the Central Forest Spine Master Plan. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. And we are now also available on Spotify. You've been listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.